If you're just catching up with us, we are in sunny, vibrant Wellington, New Zealand, the perfect spot to have a proper chat about animal health and wellness with holistic veterinary acupuncturist and traditional Chinese medicine consultant Charlene McGinnis. My name is Catherine Skye Knott. I'm a holistic journalist, broadcaster, and the host of Nature Therapy and Beyond. Every week, we travel around the globe to talk nature and holistic health with experts and enthusiasts. Today, Charlene is answering some pet questions from listeners as we relax in the company of her two cats and her dog, Prince. She's been telling us about past work with canine behavior and training, providing valuable suggestions on nutrition, and she's also given us some excellent insights into animal communication, the amazing effects this sort of engagement with our pets can have on their anxiety and feelings of security. My next question for Charlene comes from a listener in Canada who would like to know a little bit more about the potential lifespan of her canine. I have a question from someone who wants to know about specifically larger breeds of dogs. They want to know what the leading cause of death was.
It's a good question. Cancer is a major cause of death in dogs. I was recently reading a body of research which I found quite interesting. Dependent on age and the risk factors, you can't know genetics and your predisposition is what it is, but the risk of death from cancer increases exponentially with age, interestingly, until the animal's about 10, and then it seemingly declines, which I found quite interesting. There is that whole idea that large animals or even humans tend to die of cardiac issues. But I still do believe that cancer is the biggest thing. You're looking at, again, preventative-wise, is nutrition, how you're vaccinating, neutering, whether they're indoor, outdoor animals. They all contribute to the mortality factor of animals, as they do with humans, right? I know with the larger breeds, there's research that shows they do tend to, unfortunately, have shorter lifespans than smaller breeds. But it's not so much that it's the height of the animal, but it's actually the body mass. Yeah, it's just an unfortunate thing. However, with that in mind, the larger breeds do tend to have short lifespans. But within a particular breed, the larger animals actually tend to live longer. So, yeah, I presume it's a combination of things like how they metabolize food, the comparison between healthy weight mass when they're young and the runts. Like, unfortunately, runts of the litter tend to have congenital issues.
Well, that is interesting. So obviously, it's all really general, but larger dogs tend to have a shorter lifespan than smaller dogs. And you're saying larger dogs, their cause of death tends to be cancer, but only up until the age of 10, was it?
Yeah, it was a large body of research. They showed that after 10, though, it does decline. I presume that some genetic factor giving some degree of protection. Yeah, at that age, those larger canine breed sizes have also increased risk of death from musculoskeletal or gastrointestinal issues. I believe it would be because of that increased body mass, increased size.
Interesting. Another question is, someone wants to know, is human food suitable for dogs? And what might be or what might not be, or what you should know about feeding your animal your own food?
Ooh, good question. Yeah, I mean, the broad answer is yes. Animal food is not suitable for humans. human food is fine for dogs, but there is certain foods to avoid, of course. We know. Seems chocolate is kind of known everywhere that is not good. Increases heart rate and stay away from chocolate. But there is actually quite a few other foods that are not good for dogs. Grapes, raisins, onion, garlic in large amounts. A little bit of garlic is all right. Be cautious with salt and sugar content. And artificial sweeteners are definitely a no-go for dogs. Quite toxic. The artificial sweeteners create insulin surge in the body, which then results in a drop in blood sugars quite dramatically and very, very dangerous, life-threatening, in fact. Grapes and raisins, they're not sure why, but it can cause renal failure in dogs. That's something to be very cautious of. Those particular food groups and onions as well can cause anemia. A particular component of the onion affects the red blood cells there. Yeah, so that would be ones I would avoid. But foods that are okay, potatoes, carrot, broccoli, meats, but I would be cautious with how much fat is on the meats. Be practical about not giving them big fatty strips of bacon. In moderation, it all comes back to historically dogs were scavenger animals and they would consume human table scraps. They're quite different from cats in that way that they can kind of eat a bit of what we eat and be quite safe with it. I wouldn't recommend solely feeding a dog human food. You really want to be cautious of them getting the right amino acids and such like, and having a balanced diet is key. So you would want to complement that with some dog-specific food just to make sure you're giving them a healthy, complete food source.
So a little bit of a balance. There are some positive aspects to kibble food. It's measured the way it is for a reason.
Yeah, commercial pet food, it is. Prior to production, it is going through some regulation and that it is a complete food source, be it kibble-based or even meat-based. In New Zealand, you can get quite good frozen dog food.
I know you had mentioned the last time we talked that cats can't have simply just a kibble diet because it's actually not very good for them.
Absolutely.
And I think you had suggested fish or meat for them as well because, well, the omega-3 from the fish, but also because they're carnivorous, so they do need the raw meat, and dogs also can benefit from the meat as well.
Yeah, cats are completely carnivorous, whilst dogs are omnivores, so they can have a combination of plant-based and meat-based. It's just getting that balance.
What about dairy? Is dairy wrong for most animals?
Yes. Most animals do not have the capabilities to digest lactose. Generally, no, dairy is not a good idea.
I wanted to talk about animal fasting because I think animals are supposed to, the same way that people are supposed to fast periodically throughout the year, but some people get very upset when they notice their animal isn't eating, and that can be a sign of something else. So what is the deal with animal fasting?
Yeah, that, again, a good question, because amongst humans, intermittent fasting has become quite popular and there are health benefits and people very passionate about this for the health benefits it provides. Domestic animals, I know in the US particularly, it's quite popular with fasting dogs and it has shown health benefits. I am quite cautious though with people knowing when it's safe to fast an animal and when it's not. You know, you'd be looking at healthy young dogs would be a safe option, but if there's any underlying health issues, if they're pregnant, if they're feeding pups, these are all no-go areas, and fasting cats would definitely be a no-go. Cats are quite different to dogs, and it can be very dangerous for cats to fast, and they, particularly after 12 hours of not eating, they can deteriorate very quickly. So I would only say with dogs, and to be cautious, I would say I would have veterinary guidance with that just to make sure there's no underlying health conditions and that you're unaware of. So yeah, it's doing these things safely, but animals in the wild, definitely, I mean, they fast during hibernation, and when temperatures are hot, you'll notice often wild animals will stop eating, and they are adapted to do that though, to go with intermittent food availability, and they become insulin resistant during this stage so they can actually preserve their glucose. So they're quite adapted to do that. It's doing things safely there with that fasting.
So I suppose you kind of have to know your pet. If your pet is not interested in eating their food, but generally they seem pretty with it for the most part, then you might be able to keep an eye on them and think that maybe this is just a self-imposed natural fasting.
Yeah, I think going off food is a tricky thing, and mine will do it sometimes, and I notice it is when it's hot. So during summer, the appetite seems to drop, which is natural. Humans, I myself, if I'm in a hot climate, I just have zero interest in food. It is looking for other things, exactly like if they're sleeping, if behavioural patterns have changed. And the tricky thing, if they're not eating, is not so much of an immediate concern, but it's more if they're not drinking. So dehydration can be really dangerous really quickly. I mean, within 24 hours, things can start to cascade. Same with humans, right? Dehydration will get you quicker than not eating. So dogs, it's not quite as concerning as it is with cats. If cats stop eating, even for 12 hours, I would be calling your vet. That's me. Just because sometimes once they stop eating for days, it can be hard to get them eating again. And so you don't want to get to that stage. Yeah.
So it's much different for cats than it is for dogs.
Yeah, dogs are kind of that scavenger, and dogs in the wild would go without food for a while. And in saying that, big cats will be the same, but domestic felines, you need to be a bit more cautious.
When you mentioned dehydration, what are some of the signs of dehydration? If they don't appear to be ill in any other ways, are there signs to look for?
If you have an indoor cat, a big one is, are they using their litter tray? So quite a reliable source. Dehydration, they'll be sleeping. They don't look well. You know, when you're dehydrated, you're not vital and running around and engaged. So, yeah, I'd be looking at urine output. But I wouldn't take the risk if they're not drinking and they're not looking well. Just give your vet a call and they'll be able to talk to you over the phone and get a good assessment kind of. And no doubt they'd probably get you to take them in.
Now, with the recent health concerns or social distancing and isolating, would you say this is sort of giving us an opportunity to spend extra time with our pets that might actually be educational for us in terms of getting back to nature?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the one really happy group is your pets at the moment. Mine couldn't be happier. Actually, both here with me, they love it. They love it. And the few animals I've seen over the past week, talking to owners, one thing I saw yesterday was very sweet. She's like, oh, I'm just so happy I can spend the next month with him. I was like, oh, that's really endearing. It's really sweet. I think the main thing that this is going to provide us with is it's going to slow us down. And we're in a world where everything is time. Time is money. And I get that. I mean, I run a business too. I totally do. But it is going to give the opportunity to kind of slow down and reflect, which is always a healthy thing to do if you live a life where you're on the go. I realize a lot of people are probably going to be really stressed because there is the economical association with us slowing down. But silver lining is shelters globally. A lot of animals are just flooding out the door. So people are anticipating lockdown, isolation, and I could not think of a better companion than an animal if you're living alone. It's fantastic company, and especially I think for elderly, and if they're on lockdown, that's a really positive from this. You know, people have adopted so many animals. That's beautiful. Totally. I think it's an opportunity to spend time with our animals and to bond with them. And especially if you've got a new animal over this period of time, like my cousin in the US, she's recently adopted an Alsatian, and it's just made her so happy. She's just like, I love him immediately. If we dwell and think about the current economical situation, really depressing. So having an animal there, it's just going to give that love and hopefully lighten that emotional burden and be maybe a little bit of a distraction from everything else that's going on in the world. Like, there's no avoiding it really. You've gone social media and it's everywhere. So yeah, something positive to direct our unconditional love and affection on.
Oh, that's wonderful. I hadn't thought that there'd be an increase in the amount of animal adoptions, but what better time for it, really?
What better time for it? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think especially now that people are aware that animals are not a carrier, so they're the perfect companion to have when you can't socialize with fellow humans, you can have animals.
Yeah, and that was something I was going to ask you. What is the status on animals as carriers or animals being affected by this virus?
I don't see a correlation with animals being carrier, and it's been fairly confirmed with research that there was, I think, two cases, both dogs, in Hong Kong where the dog tested positive, but both its owners were COVID-19 positive and living in an apartment and in isolation. So the probability of contamination is very high. Both the animals were asymptomatic. They displayed no symptoms of the virus itself. I would say they've just been contaminated with their owners. And again, it's all being precautionary, right? Because I'm sure there's people in labs all around the world working incredibly hard to gain knowledge about transmission and more about the virus. There is associations saying to be cautious if you are carrying the virus, if you are positive or you're presenting symptoms or you're waiting for a test but you feel like you're not feeling good, you're displaying signs, then to distance yourself with your animals and following with those guidelines. I would maybe be a bit more precautious if currently having symptoms of coronavirus, and to follow sanitizing kind of before you prepare pet food and having a little bit of distance between you and your pet. It is human to human contracted, yeah.
Right. Display normal, responsible sanitary behavior.
I would myself, if you are carrying the virus, if you are positive, or at least if you're awaiting testing.
Speaking of the recent health concerns, do they send in their animal that you, and you work with the animal instead of having the owner come in with them?
Exactly. New Zealand Veterinary Health is deemed essential service, and my precautionary measures are contact with owners, not so much animals. I mean, globally, you know, it's a growing movement, but the need is there. So I have started to engage with remote work in that sense, remote consultations via Skype and such like. There is quite a good medium, and it's essentially, because we can't do that face to face, it's not so much, obviously the acupuncture is not involved, but holistic health looks at diet, lifestyle, and a major emphasis on prevention and movements, exercises, massage, rehab owners can do for their animals, and just approaching treatment from that avenue as opposed to the hands-on therapy that I provide when I can do face to face.
I'm so pleased that they've considered veterinary services an essential service. Governments are being conscientious, and I'm really glad that animals haven't been overlooked.
I think as well, kudos to the World Veterinary Association, was ready to step up. There's just no negotiating that. How could it not be an essential service?
Animal health is an around-the-clock venture. Our pets are definitely day and night companions. In the last episode, Charlene offered some advice to Kathy, the owner of an 11-year-old poodle named Caesar. Since then, Kathy has reconnected with the show, and she had this message for Charlene.
Hi, Catherine. My name is Kathy Negus, and I just listened to your show, Nature Therapy and Beyond, with your guest, Charlene, the pet expert from New Zealand. I'm so glad she addressed my poodle skin issues, and we are following her advice by giving him probiotics and tripe today. We can source both locally, where we get his raw diet food. Thank you from Kathy and Caesar.
In many ways, getting to know our animals and taking time to bond with them, learning their subtle language and forms of communication, can improve our overall well-being. This act improves our immune function, decreases blood pressure, boosts serotonin levels, and produces endorphins. And that's just the physical. This type of focused intention is its own form of meditation, a study in compassion. I know from experience, a bond with an animal can heal you. That's where the power of animal communication comes in.
I mean, it is quite esoteric, right? And people kind of get a bit like, but I just think it's such a tool for owners, and they're kind of unaware of it. Yeah, the ability to communicate with our pets is fantastic. Yeah.
Absolutely. I am big on esoteric. I am a huge fan.
Oh, my.
So, especially where I work in the health industry, most people feel that there's something to intuition because, of course, when you're caring for someone or a patient, you have an intuitive feeling about them a lot of the time if you're really connected to what you're doing. And how could you not trust your instincts, you know? So I think it's to be embraced. Now, there was a study I had asked you about earlier.
The connection and contact with animals boosts our immune system.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, because I had read that study. Going outside and interacting with animals, boosting the immune system, elevating a sense of well-being, and also apparently the frequency of animal noises like purring from a cat have a vibrational healing frequency.
It's really interesting, absolutely. I mean, firstly, the contact with animals is, there's so much research saying that depending on the species, but cats, dogs are also generally fairly kinesthetic, like we like to be touched in a loving and therapeutic way. And immediately, it's kind of like that endorphins slow your heart rate, releases serotonin, dopamine. So all natural relaxant, natural painkillers, antidepressants. It's similar to, I was reading an article that said it's like eating chocolate. You know, you straight away, the reward system in your brain is like, this is good. Keep doing this. This is good. So they are fantastic. And you just need to see like therapy dogs. They do fantastic work in helping people with illness in retirement homes and as well with people who have mental illness and such like that they just can sense to prior to them having a episode, for want of a better description. I remember seeing a video of a dog, his owner. It was something along the lines of panic attacks, and she started to display mild symptoms of it coming on, and their dog sensed straight away, and it was so sweet. You see him jumps up and he's kind of licking her face, he's in her face, and it's just that immediate contact helped stop or prevent that episode going to kind of full potential. And it's amazing to see that the effect it has on humans being around animals, and that exchange is good for both of us. It shows that dogs also release similar neurotransmitters and the endorphin, oxytocin, which makes us bond with each other, you know, mother with her baby. Yeah, neurological effects, and it's fantastic because it's natural and there's no side effects except for wanting more animals. But definitely, I think that frequency thing you mentioned as well is very interesting, and I've delved in it a little bit with cats. There was David Teheep, I believe. He's done like 4 years of research into certain frequencies eliciting certain brainwaves in cats, and he created this. It's a beautiful album. It's called Music for Cats. And I came across it a few years ago now, and I really recommend listening to it. It's fantastic, and playing it to your cats. As soon as we put it on, it was very interesting. Bowie became quite relaxed and splayed himself out, but as did Prince the dog. So during the audio, it's purring, and it's very interesting noises. And even though I'm not a cat, it's really nice to listen to. It shows to simulate, you know, the alpha brain waves that create meditative conscious state.
I was thinking of downloading that through iTunes, and I saw that it was music especially for cats. That's really neat. My cat likes Mozart, specifically Mozart.
I did read about that in classical music as well. It's that similar, creating those brainwaves. It does it in children, babies, humans as well, doesn't it? It's, yeah, therapy by music is fantastic. Our environment and nature, and there's a big concept, and one of the big foundations of Chinese medicine is the Tao, and it's incredibly thought-provoking and kind of the, one of those things you move through gently, and how we perceive the world and living in harmony with the world. And when we don't, the illnesses and disharmony and essentially havoc it creates, which, yeah, speaks for itself, is hopefully things moving forward will allow us to be more connected to each other as well, and our environment and animals, and just become more aware, I think, is the big thing.
Yeah. When we are forced to be uncomfortable, we're really innovative at finding other ways to improve our lives.
Humans are incredibly adaptive in that sense, and I think you only grow when you're outside your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Anyone with success, it's when you're on the pinnacle of fear, you really adapt. Neuroscience, again, isn't my specialty, but presumably you create those new pathways in the brain and you just get things firing. The brain likes change. It likes change of routine. It puts us outside of our emotional comfort zones. we grow. And it's good, I think, as people to always be thinking, how do I be the best me? How do I be respectful of my environment and those around me? And again, I think, like you said earlier, it's operating from the heart, not the brain.
Yeah.
The brain has its purpose, of course. If you operate from your heart, it's only good things come.
On the topic of heartfelt care for our pets, the Canadian Veterinary Medical Association has offered some guidelines for taking care of our animals during the global health situation. The association says that there have been circumstances where animals have become infected with COVID-19 through close contact with infected humans. Anyone who is ill or suspects they have the virus is told to be cautious around their pets. Charlene made an excellent point in advising us to take our usual precautions of washing hands before preparing animal food, water bowls, or handling their toys. If we are displaying symptoms of the virus, to limit our contact with pets. The Veterinary Association recommends that people with symptoms, or those who are self-isolating, should follow similar guidelines around animals that they would around people. The association suggests that if your animal develops a respiratory situation, or you feel that they are in need of care, to call your veterinarian rather than just going to the clinic. It's very possible that some other, more common pathogen or condition could be the cause of your pet's situation. And if you're not displaying symptoms and are not required to self-isolate, taking walks with your dog and spending time with your pets increases vitality and improves mental health, keeping both of you at an optimal frequency. And speaking of good vibrations, I'm following Charlene's recommendation. I've provided a link to David T.E.'s website, Music for Cats, in this week's episode information. Find out what your favorite critter has to say about it. On next week's episode of NT&B, we are gearing up for a trip to the wilds of Australia. We'll set a course deep within our internal landscape as we meet up with a contemporary shaman. She walks a path of heart-centric awareness, weaving a conscious tapestry of balance between her own energy and that of the environment. It sounds like quite a life, this study of shamanic practices, and I absolutely cannot wait to introduce you. See you then. You're listening to Nature, Therapy, and Beyond with Catherine Skynot. Appreciation to our guest, veterinary acupuncturist, and traditional Chinese medicine consultant, Charlene McGinnis. Gratitude to Blue Dot Sessions, www.sessions.blue, for our instrumentals. And to you, thank you for listening.